Welcome to this AAT podcast, where today I want to help you get ready for another payroll year end, guiding you through the statutory deadlines and what needs to be done to avoid potentially expensive penalties that will be charged if your employer or your client fails to submit these annual PAY returns accurately, on time, and online. Let me begin by explaining what PAY returns must be completed and submitted to HMRC by our employers or employer clients. Employers are required to submit a P35 employer annual return, and only one P35 should be submitted for each PAYE scheme. Next, we need a P14 end-of-year summary for every employee for whom a P11 deductions working sheet had to be prepared. Some employers will also need to complete and submit a P38A employer's supplementary return. A P38A is required to report details of any worker who has been employed, but where the employer has not completed a P14 end-of-year summary or a student form P38S. We will look in more detail at the completion of these statutory returns later. Let me also explain why we have to submit these annual PAYE and NIC returns to HMRC. Employers pay wages, salaries, fees, bonuses, commissions, and other emoluments that the law requires to be paid under deduction of PAYE income tax and Class 1 NICs. Employers also have to make student loan deductions from the wages, salaries, etc. of some employees. And then contractors in the construction industry have to make deductions from payments to subcontractors who are not registered for gross payment. These CIS deductions have to be accounted for through the end of year PAY returns. But I will deal with the CIS deductions issues in a separate podcast. Most payments of wages, salaries, etc. are made either weekly or monthly, although some people are paid 2 weekly or 4 weekly, and there are the less common and more irregular payment periods. Whatever the payment period, the PAYE income tax, Class 1 NICs and student loan deductions taken from the wages, salaries, etc. must be paid over to HMRC within 14 days of the end of the tax month in which the payment is made, or in some circumstances, deemed to have been made by the employer. A tax month runs from the 6th day of one month to the 5th day of the following month. For example, the tax year starts on the 6th of April, and the first month runs to the 5th of May. The next month from the 6th of May to the 5th of June, and so on. That 14-day payment deadline normally means pay in HMRC by the 19th of the month, but this is extended by up to 3 more days to the 22nd of the month, providing that payment is made by an acceptable electronic payment method. Therefore, the pay-as-you-earn, etc. deductions from wages, salaries, paid in the tax month from 6th of February to 5th of March 2011, would have to be paid over to HMRC by the 19th or 22nd of March 2011. The exception to the monthly payments rule is where the payments of PAYE, NICs, student loan, and CIS deductions average less than £1,500 per month. And in those circumstances, the employer can choose whether to pay over the amounts deducted on a monthly or a quarterly basis. Currently, whilst an employer is obliged to operate pay-as-you-earn and deduct Class 1 NICs when making the payments of wages, salaries, etc., and has to pay the amounts deducted over to HMRC every month or quarterly, there is no requirement to make any return of the amounts paid to employees and the deductions paid over to HMRC until after the tax year has ended. This is why the law requires employers to complete and submit annual PAY returns, so that HMRC can reconcile the payments received in the tax year with the amounts that were due and in accordance with the annual returns. In completing the annual returns, as I will explain in more detail later, employers have to summarise the payments made and the statutory deductions taken from those payments during the previous tax year. It is only at this opportunity does HMRC have the ability to check whether the correct deductions have been made. Section 2. Payroll year-end statutory deadlines. The statutory deadlines for submission of the 2010-2011 employer annual returns to HMRC are as follows. The first deadline that I want to bring to your attention is not an annual return deadline, but it is still very important. And that deadline is the payment deadline of the 19th or 22nd of April 2011. Any outstanding PAYE income tax, Class 1 NICs, student loan or CIS deductions must be paid by this deadline to avoid an interest charge arising. Although we now have the late payment penalties that kicked in on the 19th or 22nd of May 2010, and these will be assessed by HMRC after the end of the 2010-11 tax year, we mustn't forget the interest charge that will arise after the 19th or 22nd of April. Pay-as-you-earn regulations require that the statutory end-of-year returns, the P35 employer annual return and the P14s, are submitted to HMRC within 44 days of the end of the tax year. And what that means for the 2010-11 pay-as-you-earn returns is that the statutory deadline is the 19th of May 2011. Now, this is where I have to remind you of a major change that affects the submission of the 2010-11 end-of-year PAYE returns, a change to previous years, something that you will have been used to. This is the withdrawal of extra statutory concession B46. Withdrawn effective from the 31st of March 2011. Extra statutory concession B46, which had wider application than just pay-as-you-earn returns, allowed for an extension to the statutory deadlines and gave us another 7 working days after the statutory deadline before penalties would be charged by HMRC. The withdrawal of extra statutory concession B46, which is in line with the idea of online filing, means that the 2010-11 end-of-year pay-as-you-earn returns must be submitted to HMRC by that statutory deadline of 19th of May 2011, with no extension or any allowance for postal or other delays. If the returns are late, penalties will be charged unless you can convince HMRC of having a reasonable excuse. The statutory deadline for issuing a P60, the end-of-year certificate of pay and tax, which has to be provided to employees, is the 31st of May 2011. And I will talk a bit more about that form later. Let us not forget that there are penalties for late submission of these annual PAY returns, and also different penalties for submitting incorrect returns. The penalties that HMRC will charge for late submission of PAY returns start at £100 per 50 employees or batch of 50 employees. So the same figure for just one or two employees as for 50 employees. It's £100 per 50 employees for each month or part month that the return is late. So for example, a P35 submitted on the 31st of August 2011, where there are 51 employees, would be 3 months, 11 days late, and the penalty would be for 4 months multiplied by £200. In other words, two batches of 50, given a total of £800. An additional penalty will be charged if the failure continues after 12 months, and that will be based on the maximum amount of tax outstanding at the previous 5th of April. But this penalty is subject to mitigation. We also need to be aware that HMRC may charge a penalty if an employer submits a paper return, when virtually all employers are now required to submit their end-of-year PAY returns by an online method. The amount of the penalty that will be charged will be dependent on the number of P14s included in the pay-as-you-earn return, but that penalty is up to a maximum of £3,000. The penalty will apply regardless of whether the return is filed on time or late, and it will still apply even if the employer subsequently corrects the situation by filing another return online. The penalties for submitting incorrect pay-as-you-earn annual returns are dealt with under the new penalty regime introduced from 2009-10, where the amount of the penalty will depend on the type of offence. Most errors are likely to fall in the area of carelessness, and penalties may not be charged or may be suspended if the employer can demonstrate that reasonable care was taken. We therefore must do our best to avoid penalties arising, helping our clients or our employers to apply reasonable care and to submit the returns accurately, on time, and online. I hope that this podcast will help you and your clients to do that. Section 3. When annual PAY returns are not required. We do need to think about whether PAY returns need to be filed at all, especially if there's more than one pay-as-you-earn scheme registered. HMRC provides guidance on what to do if an employer has no annual return to make, and the guidance warns that failing to notify this information to HMRC may result in the issuing of unnecessary reminders and also penalty notices. A PAY annual return will not be required if no payments of wages, salaries, etc. have been made to any director or employee, and the employer has not had to complete a P11 deductions working sheet during the 2010-11 tax year. We can notify HMRC in writing or by telephone, keeping a copy of the letter or note of telephone call. But by far the best way of notifying HMRC is to do it online, completing the online form by providing the employer name, the PAYE reference, and the contact details of the person completing the online form. The declaration that has to be completed says, "I have no employer annual return to make." There is a tick box and also other tick boxes to say yes or no as to whether or not a P11DB, return of Class 1A NICs and return of expenses and benefits employer declaration, is due. In most cases, if there are no P14s, there will also be no P11DB. If there have been no payments of wages, salaries, etc., the annual PAY return will not be required. This may occur where the company has a registered PAYE scheme, but there are no payments to the directors or employees, usually because they are paid through another company, perhaps a holding company or a service company. If there have been payments to directors or employees, but the amounts have been below the National Insurance Contribution's lower earnings limit of £97 per week or £421 per month, and there have been no NICs or PAYE tax deducted, there will be no need to file an end-of-year PAYE return. We would then notify HMRC. However, if payments in any week or month have exceeded the NIC's lower earnings limit, even where no deductions were required because the amounts did not reach the NIC's earning threshold, a P14 will be required so that the employee or director will receive a credit for NICs. In those circumstances, the annual PAY return must be filed, despite the fact that there were no deductions. Next section, checks to be made before completing the returns. Before we start on the completion of the annual PAY returns, we need to make some basic checks, starting with a reconciliation of the payroll, which perhaps has already been done on a regular weekly or monthly basis. Let us consider whether we have all the necessary information and whether any adjustments may be required to the payments that have been processed through the payroll. Have there been any underpayments or overpayments where manual amendments were made after the payroll was processed? Also, have there been any payments made through expenses, petty cash, or the purchase ledger that need to be included by adjustment to the end-of-year PAYE returns? I have been talking to AAT members at their branch meetings about some end-of-year checks that should be made before the payroll is finally closed down and the end-of-year PAY returns are completed and filed. Starting with income tax, are there any non-standard tax codes operating, such as code NT, code BR, code OT or 0T, code DO 40% or code D 150%? And do we have notices of coding to support the use of those codes? Or should any adjustments be made? We need to be especially careful of the use of code NT because we're not deducting tax, and can we justify that? Next, what about NICs and the category letters in use? We should check that the NIC's category letters are correct. Category A is the most common, and Category X means no national insurance contributions for either the employee or the employer. So are we sure that is right? Category C is the correct category where we have employees who have reached retirement age and they do not have to pay NICs, but the employer continues to pay as normal. Category X may be the default used by the software if no NICs were deducted. We should not use Category X if earnings reach the lower earnings level in any week or month. Next, we need to consider whether we have evidence to justify any lower rates of NICs being deducted. Do we have an age exception certificate, Form CA4140, for any employer director who we've not deducted NICs from because they've reached retirement age? Do we have any women paid at the married women lower rate, where we need a CA4139 or a CF383? And my annual check would be to ask the lady whether she's still entitled to pay lower rate contributions. Do we have any deferment certificates, Form CA2700, for someone with more than one job, where there's been deferment of the maximum rate of contributions? Next, we must recalculate directors' NICs at the year end if the annual earnings period basis was not used on the payroll. This is because insufficient NICs may have been deducted when the normal basis is used, and either bonuses have been paid to the directors or where a director has left during the tax year. There is a useful checking tool on HMRC's website for directors' annual earnings basis. Finally, have any employee loans been written off, where we may report the write-off on the P11D, but Class 1 NICs are due and should be paid through the payroll? What about any other payments that have been made off payroll or untaxed payments through the payroll, such as payments in lieu of notice or ex gratia payments that have been treated as within the £30,000 Section 401 ITPA exemption? Are we sure that's correct? Do we need to reconsider? Have we operated PAYE on payments to casual labour? Or do we need to make an end-of-year adjustment? Are we satisfied that payments made gross to individuals treated as self-employed did not need to be included on the payroll? I always consider non-executive directors, where there may be an NIC's liability, even if there's no tax because they're treated as self-employed for tax purposes. Other payments that HMRC officers pick up and recover income tax, NIC's interest and penalties, where the amount should have gone through the payroll, include the following: round sum allowances or per diems that are not covered by a dispensation, non-receipted expenses, mobile phone top-ups, Oyster card top-ups in the London area, home-to-work travel reimbursement, which is a personal expense, or indeed other personal expenses, where it's a pecuniary liability and HMRC will say pay as you earn and NICs apply. All these points need to be considered before we start work on completing the annual returns. Section 5, completing the annual returns. Starting with the P35 employer annual return, I will remind you that only one P35 return should be filed for each pay as you earn scheme, and that we must never submit a paper P35 as well as doing the filing online. The P35 is a five-part return, starting with Part 1, which provides a summary of employees and directors, listing for each individual the details of their total Class 1 NICs and income tax payments. Next, in Part 2, we have the summary of payments for the tax year, added together the Class 1 NICs and income tax deductions, and then deducting any advance received from HMRC to give us a combined total at Box 9. We then have to add in the total of any student loan deductions at Box 10 and deduct any statutory payments recovered to give us a net figure at box 22. For relevant employees who are contractors also, we must then add any CIS deductions from subcontractors and deduct the tax and NICs paid already to leave a balance payable now. At box 28, we can deduct any CIS deductions that the employer has suffered as a CIS subcontractor, leaving perhaps a balance to be paid by the 19th of April 2011 payment deadline, not by the 19th of May PAYE annual return deadline. This is why we need to either prepare the return or at least do a reconciliation before that 19th of April deadline so that we can identify any balance in payment that might need to be made in order to avoid an interest charge. Part 3 of the P35 is the checklist, where every question must be answered by the employer. These questions need to be considered carefully. Question 1 asks, have you included a Form P14 end of year summary or completed and retained a Form P38S student employees for every person in your paid employment, either on a casual basis or otherwise, during the above tax year? If the answer is no, we are told to please send a Form P38A employer supplemental return, and I will look at that form in a moment. Question 2 asks, did you make any free of tax payments to any employee? In other words, did you bear any of the tax yourself rather than deduct it from the employee? HMRC's Help Book E10 Guidance says a free of tax payment is a payment where the employer rather than the employee bears any tax due. I will always tell you that this does not apply to any payment grossed up through the payroll or to any payments included in a PAYE settlement agreement, where in that case the liability is transferred to the employer. The answer to this question is almost always no. Question 3 asks us, so far as you know, did anyone else pay expenses or in any way provide vouchers or benefits to any of your employees whilst they were employed by you during the year? This might be relevant for someone on secondment, where perhaps the foreign parent or subsidiary company is paying some of the expenses. Or it may apply to a customer or supplier incentive scheme. A yes answer would be required if the employer was involved in those arrangements, but otherwise the answer will generally be no. Question 4A asks, did anyone employed by a person or company outside the UK work for you in the UK for 30 or more days in a row? And question 4B says, if yes, have you included them on a Form P14? HMRC guidance in the Help Book E10 says, if the answer to the first question is yes, you will have to complete and enclose a Form P14 for each employee concerned. However, I can say that this would not always be necessary, because an employee coming from a country with which the UK has a double taxation agreement would not have to have a P14 completed or tax deducted if they're in the UK for less than 183 days and the costs are not met by the UK company. Question 5A asks us, have you paid any of an employee's pay to someone other than the employee, for example, to a school? And then question 5B says, if yes, have you included the pay on their Form P14? This is a classic error where the employer has reimbursed the employee or director or the school for school fees that are payable by the employee or director. The NIC liability falls within Class 1, not Class 1A, and the NIC should have been paid through the payroll, not through the P11DB. HMRC guidance in Help Book E10 also points out that this does not include attachment of earnings orders, payments to the child support agency, and salary sacrifice arrangements. Question 6A asks, are you a service company? And question 6B says, if yes, have you operated the intermediaries legislation, sometimes known as IR35, or the managed service companies legislation? This doesn't apply to most employers completing end-of-year returns, but it is a difficult area, and for more detailed information, we should have a look at the CWG2, the Employer Further Guide to Pay As You Earn and NICs. The Help Book E10 also has some guidance on this point, which, as I say, is not relevant to the vast majority of employers. It will be of concern to limited companies, LLPs and partnerships that might be caught by the IR35 or managed service company legislation. Turning to part four of the P35, quite a small part, this is about contracted out pension schemes, and we have to enter the employer contracted out or econ number from the contracting out certificate, and there should only be one number to enter there. Finally, part five is the employer certificate and declaration, where we tick one box to confirm the P14s are enclosed or have been sent separately, and we have to state the number of parts, not the number of P14s, where with large employers, the P14s may be sent in batches. We also have boxes to complete to confirm if a P38A employer supplementary return is enclosed and to say whether forms P11D and a P11DB are due. My advice to employers is to consider these questions carefully before just ticking the boxes. Too often I see them incorrectly completed. Now let me turn to the P14 end of year summary forms, where the paper version has changed for 2010-11, becoming a two-part form instead of the old three parts, where the orange was income tax, the green NICs, and there was a blue copy for the P60 for employees. Anyone using a paper form will find that there is only one HMRC copy plus the P60, which is one of the administrative savings that HMRC has brought in. However, I do understand that some employers may already have received three-part forms and they can go ahead and still use them. A P14 is required for every employee employed in the year, including any leavers who have earnings in excess of the lower earnings limit of £97 per week or £421 per month. A P60 must be provided to all employees still employed on the 5th of April 2011, but should not be given to any employees who leave the employment before the end of the tax year, even if they leave on the 31st of March. The deadline for providing a P60 to employees, as I've already said, is the 31st of May 2011. Employers can provide copies or duplicates, which should be marked copy or duplicate. And for the first time for 2010-11, P60 forms can be provided in electronic format to employees, whereas previously the requirement was to provide them with a paper P60. Next, let us consider the P38A employer supplementary return, which I view as the return of casual labour and which is often overlooked. It is for workers for whom you have not completed a Form P14 or Form P38S for the year 6th of April 2010 to the 5th of April 2011. You must complete this form if you answered no to question one of the checklist on your Form P35 employer's annual return. Employers need to sign one declaration on page 1 or page 2, where we ask if a P46 is held, sign statement A or B, and was the worker paid less than the £97 per week or £421 per month. If the answer is yes to both questions, in other words, statement A or B signed, paid less than £97 per week or £421 per month, we can sign the front page declaration and that's it. No other information needs to be provided. However, if no is the answer to either question, we must then complete section A or section B of the P38A. We would enter details in section A where a worker was paid £97 or more in any week or £421 per month or more in any month, where they've been taken on for more than a week. We would enter details in section B of any worker paid more than £100 in the year and not already listed in section A. Yes, only £100. That's a very old limit that hasn't been uprated. There are some special rules for harvest casuals, which I won't cover on this podcast, but where you can find details in the CWG2 Further Guide to Pay As You Earn on pages 65 and 66. Next, the form P38S for student employees, which is another of the annual PAY returns, but it is the one and only form that does not have to be submitted to HMRC. It has to be retained by the employer for a minimum of 3 years plus the current year. the P38S must be completed by the student when she or he starts working for the employer. The employer must complete the form at the year end or when the student leaves the employment. A P38S form must be retained for every student employee working for the employer in the school holidays, and it doesn't apply to employees who work outside of school holidays. The P38S procedure allows employers to pay student employees without deducting income tax. It does not provide for pay-as-you-earn procedures to be ignored completely. In preparing for payroll year-end, we must ask, have the forms been completed? And has any student been paid more than the £6,475 personal allowance limit in the year to 5th of April 2011? Code 0T should have been applied to any payment in excess of £6,475. So this is one time when we need to check this. Do we need to make an adjustment before we close the payroll down? Do we need to get the forms in? And as I will say on the CPD courses, particularly at Easter time, we may have to get students to sign another P38S for the following tax year. The P38S procedure doesn't apply to Class 1 NICs, which are due if the earnings exceed the earnings threshold of £110 per week or £476 per month, unless, of course, the student employee is under age 16 when there are no NICs for either the employee or the employer. Section 6, Summary. The completion and filing of employer annual payroll returns is an important and onerous task, and one that is made more difficult because we only do it once a year. Preparation is important, and checks and balances, including reconciliation of the payroll payments and deductions, have to be made before we start on the process of filing these PAY returns. The next step is the filing of the returns, which for most employers, with very few exceptions, has to be done online. That is something I will look at in part 2 of this 2010-11 payroll year-end podcast. Thank you.